Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
I hope everyone enjoyed the fourth weekend. We have a captivating subject for all of our listeners, but it may be even more special for our English listeners in East Barnsley and our good buddy in Coventry, who may have walked across Abbey Road on her way to Polesden Lacey. Tonight's show is on a Wednesday, not a stupid bloody Tuesday, so roll up for the Wednesday night edition of Nightlight Part 2, and I am the Eggman. We're broadcasting from the Nightlight studio rooftop. Our guest is a Belle, but her name is not Michelle, nor Prudence, Eleanor, or Pauline Pam, Sadie, or Lucy. She is lovely, but her name is not Rita, and she is not a meter maid, but she is a paperback writer. Her name isn't Helen Wheels either. She has a pet walrus. For dinner, she had cranberry sauce and glass onions, and for dessert, she had a flaming pie. She would be 64 if she weren't 28. We'll learn about her Uncle Albert, who lives just off of Broad Street, which is the long and winding road to Junior's Farm on the Mull of Kintyre, which is accessible only by a jet. With a little luck, we'll have a great rock show with the Watusi author of Plastic Mecca. Did you figure out tonight's topic? Here's another clue for you all. Well, let me introduce to you the one and only Tina Foster. Hi, Tina. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's my birthday, too, yeah. And Ringo's birthday was yesterday. And I did not realize this until I was going through your book that Paul and John met 63 years ago, like 2 days ago. It's on page 145.
Right.
So we have a whole bunch of things to celebrate. So are you sitting on a cornflake?
No, I'm not.
Okay. So, if people are interested in the, well, like 50-some year old conspiracy that Paul McCartney died. They can go to Tina's website, plasticmacca.blogspot.com. That's Plastic Macca, and that is spelled M-A-C-C-A. Okay, so I'm giving your Plastic Macca the highest rating Nightlight bestows on authors, which is the category of goo goo gajoob. So what does the title mean? And was
Plastic
your
Macca?
Book published yesterday?
Well, I call him Plastic Macca because, you know, plastic is malleable. The English call him Macca, McCartney, short for McCartney, right? Macca. And I heard that song Substitute by The Who. I see right through your Plastic Mac. And something just clicked. I'm like, oh, that's a perfect nickname for him. So I started using it. And, you know, I called my blog that, and I just, you know, stuck with that theme for the book, so.
Okay.
Yeah, because, it changed, obviously, a great deal from, you know, one day to the next, practically, in 1966, so.
Okay. Now, we're going to get to that, but let's start off with Paul and John meeting. What, they're teens in the late 50s. You know, in your research, what was Paul like as a young man?
I mean, all of the interviews I've seen with him, he was pretty humble and modest and good-natured, and people seemed to like him, but he was not like a pushover or make a mild. He was just like a quiet confidence about him, that he was more outspoken than like maybe George, the quiet Beatle, you know. But so, you know, I do compare and contrast the different personalities between Paul and Fall, because Fall just comes off as obnoxious and irritating and not very friendly. I mean, there are a couple of cases where he actually physically assaulted people, his ex-wife, Heather Mills, being one of them, according to her court documents. Nothing like that ever alleged against Paul, the original. People just seem to like him, you know. He was popular. He was, people wanted to be like him. He had all his kids that saw them as role models, trendsetters.
Okay. And we also state that he was a very innovative musician. He was actually, and probably a lot of people don't realize it, that he was actually a very good drummer too.
Yeah, he was one of those people that could pick up pretty much any instrument and start playing it, and playing it well. And there is a story where John Lennon was asked, is Ringo Starr the best drummer in the world? And he said, Ringo's not even the best drummer in the Beatles. And for some reason, a lot of people want to deny that that actually ever happened. That I saw that interview and I heard it with my own ears. Because I wouldn't have put that in the book if I didn't know that was a true story. So, yeah, I mean, the implication, of course, is that Paul was a better drummer. So, but Paul also played sitar and piano and lead guitar. Of course, he was the main bassist, and that was his main role in the band. But he did play lead guitar in a number of songs. And then, of course, you were saying how he was innovative. He did the tape loops on To Tomorrow Never Knows. So he was really experimental and just an immense talent, really. And that's another thing that disappears when Paul exits stage right. You know, Paul just could never live it to that. And he admits himself he cououldn't write a song like Eleanor Rigby or Here, There, and Everywhere. And I talk about that in the book, and I had quite a lot of fun just ripping him a new one. But I was using critics' words. I didn't put my own opinion on it. You know, there was plenty, and even Paul himself says he wasn't any good. Wings wasn't any good. And Paul had said that they would never put out a record that they thought wasn't good because they knew people would buy it. Like, they wouldn't put out an inferior product. He seemed to have a lot of pride in his work and integrity and as far as his work product. And Paul, like, he knew that some of his albums were pretty mediocre, to be polite. And he didn't care. He knew people would buy it because it had the Paul McCartney name on it, so he was gonna, you know, take advantage of that.
Okay, and Tina, Paul worked from, you know, in the Beatles, you know, from the early days to, you know, like Rubber Soul and Revolver, you know, those are starting to get into, you know, like one of the topics you just mentioned, you know, a little bit more of the experimental aspect of the Beatles' career. How were those couple albums a little different than Meet the Beatles and, you know, the first few that they did?
Well, I mean, every album showed growth in their artistry,
mm-hmm.
in more sophistication, and of course, branching out into different areas. Of course, Rubber Soul had a lot of like sitar on it, and Revolver
mm-hmm.
too, and then Revolver had the reverse tape loops. I think Rubber Soul had some of the back masking. I Feel Fine had Feedback, which I think was amusing. So they were innovative, and talented, very talented. There are earlier songs. I don't want to say just what. I mean, like when Please Please Me came out, apparently it was considered to be a great leap forward in their musicianship compared to their earlier songs, which were catchy, of course, but maybe not as advanced musically for whatever reason. But I mean, they're all good. They're all good stuff.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I don't think it's really until the later albums when Paul was no longer involved that you get inferior work product, and especially. The White Album was panned by critics when it came out. And I think there's a lot of filler on that. And probably, I suspect that a lot of songs were unfinished, songs that Paul had worked on. And we know that She's Leaving Home was a song that Paul actually wrote and sang because of his voice on Sgt. Pepper. So that was a song that he had recorded, and then they just put it on a later album. And so we don't really know. I mean, the one after 909 was a song that Beatles had performed. They'd written and performed it, but they never put it on an album. And so it got picked up and put on Let It Be, like years later. And so it seems to me like they were getting a little bit desperate for material, like reaching back to get these older songs. And even When I'm 64 was a song that the real Paul had written when he was 15 years old. So I wonder whether Paul would have actually ever recorded that song for an album, because he probably felt like, I mean, I was a kid when I wrote this. I've moved on. I don't really need to go back to these really early songs, but his to know for sure. But that's just my impression.
Tina, you mentioned that Rubber Soul and Revolver had sitar music on it, and you know, it's the time period when the Beatles got involved with Eastern philosophy. So there's a, like halfway through their career, there's a positive message around which Paul is centered. They also refuse to perform at the Gator Bowl if segregation was permitted. So,
So they take a stand.
They are, 1965, 66, and the Beatles are, you do go into the spiritual angle of what they were doing, trying to lift people's hearts and minds through music, as well as addressing some of America's social situations going on in the mid 60s as well. It did just a really nice job of making us well aware of some of the transformations that were going on in that 1965 to summer of 66. And,
right.
There's Paul as, Paul and John, pretty much the limelight, but, Paul is an integral part of making the world a better place. Okay,
yeah.
So after the summer of 66 happens, you allege in your Plastic Maca that something happened to Paul. Can you explain a little bit about these rumors?
Sure, that he was killed or replaced. Well, it really started back in late 1966. Was the first whisperings of Paul having been killed. The initial story was a car crash, and that a double had taken his place. And people back in 67, it was getting to be so widespread in England that the Beatles book Mentally actually refuted the rumor. And it was just kind of funny because they said, "Oh, his black Mini is safe and sound in the car, in the garage," but Paul didn't have a black Mini. George had the black Mini. Paul had the green Mini. So they got it wrong in their magazine. But so then in 69, like the rumor never went away. In 69, it came on more of an international scene. Like the news broke in America because it was the college gossip. And then it got on to like a radio show. And then it was in another college paper. And then the mainstream media picked up on it. And everybody was asking, well, is Paul McCartney dead? I mean, what's going on? And so, you know, I mean, reporters went to Falls, Scotland home, like a rundown farm, basically, and Falls there, and the reporters talked to him, and they say, oh, are you dead? And he's like, well, you know, to those who want to think of them as rumors, I'm not going to spoil that fantasy. And so basically what he said is, I'm not going to spoil the fantasy of people who think that the rumors of my death are fantasy. Of course not his death. And they don't ask if he's the original Paul. They ask, are you dead? Well, obviously he's not dead. So he can answer that truthfully, say, no, I'm not dead. That doesn't mean he's the real Paul McCartney. So, but for most people, that was the end of the story because that was in Life magazine, that was mainstream media, and they believed mainstream media. So, okay. Well, the story still never went away, and it still hasn't gone away even 53 years later. Now we have more forensic evidence. We've got voice prints. We've got, just a million photographs and lots of examples of photo tampering, not as much video tampering, a little bit. I mean, I probably studied 1,000 at least pictures of Paul and seen the videos. And, you know, it's quite unusual in a case of a double to have two forensic scientists come out and say basically that he was replaced, plus the voice print expert, Dr. Henry Truby, said that there were different voices on, you know, Yesterday, Penny Lane, and Hey Jude, which were all three attributed to Paul McCartney, but only Yesterday was the real Paul, and then there were two voice doubles. So, and then, of course, a lot of amateur detectives and, you know, people like me just notice differences in the pictures in addition to what the forensic scientists discussed in their article, because they found about six differences, and really you only need one physical difference to out a double. But they found different skull shape, which right there is already, like, proof. But they found the difference in the ears, the tragus, for example, the jawline, the palate, the teeth, and the nasal spine. So those are all basically features that can't be changed without, well, in some cases they could change the palate, but it would have taken a lot of surgery, and the teeth would have required braces, which wouldn't have been able to be hidden at that point. And then also we have different eye color, so brown to green in the space of 4 months. And height difference in eyebrows, difference in hair part, difference in, feet. I mean, the Fall, we've seen pictures of Fall with 6 toes. Paul only had 5, so how do you explain that? See, these are differences that just cannot be explained away. And I know a lot of people try to rationalize it, like, oh, your eye color can change, or, oh, your, I mean, whatever they want to rationalize, but if this were any other just normal person, it would be so beyond proven that it's a different person that it just wouldn't even be a question. But everybody wants it's the original Paul because they're emotionally attached to it being their real Paul, but it's not.
Yeah, and Tina, you mentioned that Paul would have had undergone this mouth palate surgery, and if he would have needed braces after the surgery, that would have required a year of wearing braces. Okay, so that they don't show braces don't show up in any of the photos post September 66 when this rumored car crash happened. So there's something else to possibly contend with. So as we get closer to the release of Sergeant Pepper in June of 67, you are writing about there's a scar on Paul's lip. There's all this unexplained facial hair that they grew these mustaches over the winter. We're starting to see some significant changes in this band within a short time. So that seems to be very telling of something.
Right. Well, I contend that the facial hair and the loud costumes are distractors, and the long hair too.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul's head was rounder than Falls, and this is according to the forensic scientist. And so having the longer hair helps disguise the head shape a little bit, and the facial hair helps to hide the face, but also it's a distractor in a way, because if people look at him and think, oh, he looks different, they'll say, well, it's probably just the facial hair. But also the Sergeant Pepper with the really loud outfits, like really bright colors, that's also, in my opinion, a distractor. So it draws the eye away from the face into these really bright colors. So these are tactics that are pretty common with psychological operations with people, like counterintelligence, and when you're trying to make use of doubles or imposters. Like, for example, if there's a spy and he wants, like, they'll wear fake, really bad teeth, like really crooked teeth. And so that's all that people see when they're talking to them. They're like, oh my God, their teeth are so horrible. And then, of course, they take the teeth out later and they have normal teeth. And the person can't identify him because they identified them by the bad teeth. So it's like camouflage, or it's a distractor. But you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the main feature. And it really draws the eye. It draws the eye to it. And so I think that's what was happening with the Beatles. And, of course, all the other Beatles had to kind of go along with that, with the long hair and the facial hair and the loud costumes, because otherwise, if it's just Paul, people are going to be like, what is going on? But if they're all doing it, it's kind of like, oh, this is like a new phase for the Beatles. Like, whatever they're doing is kind of weird. But if people didn't like it, you know, there was the Dick Clark show, sorry. And it was introducing the new Beatles with Sergeant Pepper, and a lot of the people were like, well, they look old and ugly, and they were not pleased with the new turn of events. You know, they liked the mom tops. They liked how the Beatles looked, clean shaven, handsome, and now they're not. So, but it had to be done, or else it would have been too obvious.
Okay, and since we're at the Sgt. Pepper's phase of their career, you might as well look at probably the most celebrated album cover and examine a few of the clues there. Yeah, there are the present Beatles in their emerging hippie days, and you get the wax figures next to them.
Old Beatles. Yeah, and it's a grave scene. It's a funeral scene that was admitted by Derek Taylor, their press secretary. You know, you have the dirt, the graveside dirt with the flowers, and then all the people that they would have at their funeral. And then the actual people in the crowd, there are some clues there as far as doubles or being rumored to be killed or replaced, like Bob Dylan. There was a rumor that he was killed on a motorcycle. Then there was the lady in the gold dress. I'm blanking on her name right now. Diana Doors. She was in a movie called On the Double about a military officer who died and was replaced. So it's like almost the exact story that I think happened with Paul. And then there's other clues on there, like, you know, of course, the left-handed bass and the flowers with the three strings for the three Beatles. And then the mirror, if you hold it up to the drum, like on the original album cover, it would say 119, he died. Well, I mean, the important thing is he died, because the 119 is not clear what that is supposed to represent, if anything. It could be a date. I don't think so. It could be, you know, three Beatles and then an X, like X'd out. That's what I lean more towards, or just anyway. And then you have, of course, Aleister Crowley on the cover, and he was going to be on there twice. And he was a founding member of Tavistock, and I think all of that hijacking of the Beatles, I think Tavistock was behind it. So, and I talk about that in the book.
I was just going to say, as you know, 1965 and 66 were winding down, you know, we kind of covered the Eastern influence on the Beatles and the Gator Bowl situation. It just seems, I always thought it just seemed very odd that Aleister Crowley would be on the album cover. Dylan seems like an obvious choice, and it also could be like they're taking another page from Dylan's playbook and, you know, just perfecting the vehicle crash and, you know, just taking a little bit farther and giving him a nod and a wink. But they introduce Crowley, which just seems suspicious. And he was, you're alleging that he was a founding member of the Tavistock Institute.
Yeah, he was MI5, a Satanist, and a founding member of Tavistock, which is psychological warfare. So I contend that the LSD and all of the mind control stuff through the music and the drugs was orchestrated by Tavistock, and using this new puppet band called, you know, the Beatles, but not really the same band, and using them to spread their influence. And Timothy Leary, who was also on board with this agenda, pushing LSD, and a CIA agent, was talking about how music and the drugs were being used for brainwashing, for culture, for control of culture, for you know, psychological warfare, basically. And it's a pretty dark agenda, actually.
Yeah. And it also, if you look at the Beatles in 67 versus the Madame Tussauds wax figures of them in, what, 64, I guess?
Yeah.
Somewhere early in their career. Paul seems like he grew a couple more inches.
Oh, yeah. No, I have pictures of Saul. Saul is taller, and it seems like he's about 2.5 inches taller than Paul was. And that's based on scales of instruments, because you know the scale, you know how long they are. And then just standing next to people of a known height, like standing next to Ringo. So Paul, yes, he was taller than Ringo, but Saul, like, towers over him. And these are pictures where you can see their feet. And the one with Saul towering over Ringo, they're both wearing sneakers. So it's not like one's wearing Beetle boots and one's wearing flat heel shoes. I mean, no, these are the same heel. And it's a huge difference. And stuff like that is hard to explain away. So, but also standing next to Jane Asher, who was 5'3", and then comparing the height. I think Paul was probably really around 5'8", and they said his official height was 5'11", but I think they were probably measuring him with his Beetle boots on. Because, of course, they want to make him taller than he really was. It's more appealing, right? But it's kind of a fiction. But Paul probably is at least that height or tall. But, you know, like when you see Paul, he played the Hofner bass, violin bass. And when Paul plays it, it looks really small, like a little child's instrument on him. So he actually switched to a different bass that was bigger and longer, you know, so that it wouldn't look so, you know, obvious. Yeah.
Okay.
So you just have to look for stuff like that.
Okay, and there's just so many different ways we can go with Sergeant Pepper, but I also want to bring up some other information as this story kept developing over the release of later albums. The next one was in the Magical Mystery Tour, and that album wasn't even called The Beatles. It was just called Beatles. And we see a little bit more. Yeah, it's a different name for the band.
Right, from The Beatles to Beatles. Yes, a lot of people pointed that out. So that's kind of a clue right there, isn't it? But also that White album, look, I mean, The Beatles, one of their selling points was their looks. their talent, their looks, their wit, their charm. So why are they putting out albums without their pictures on it? That's a little weird. And also on Sgt. Pepper, they have McCartney with his back to the audience on the back cover. So why are they hiding his face? I mean, these are, well, I mean, this is weird, right? But on Magical Mystery Tour, since you brought it up, a really famous PID song on that is I'm the Walrus. And it has the clue of the King Lear at the end, where they pipe in King Lear, where it's like, oh, bury my body, and oh, untimely death. And, of course, the official story is, oh, they're just playing BBC in the background of a recording studio, of a professional recording studio. They're just letting whatever play from the radio. Who buys that story, you know? I was like, no, of course it's on there on purpose.
Yeah.
And it has those particular lines purposely chosen as a clue. And then, of course, well, I am the Walrus. See, I think this all went down in Seattle. I think whatever happened to Paul happened in Seattle. And one of the clues is Walrus, because we have a famous building here called the Arctic Building that has about 17 terracotta walruses all around it. And, so I am the Walrus. Well, see, a lot of the way the elites communicate is through code, and they don't just come out and say stuff straight up. They give you lots and lots of clues, but you have to figure it out. And, well, and then I think another clue is on the White album, Bungling Bill. Because a lot of people's, it seems like Fall's real name is William, his first name. I have no idea what his last name is. It's not Shepherd, it's not Campbell. William Campbell is made up by Fred LeBoer, so you can throw that out. Shepherd is, people came up with that name because there's some clues, like there's a Shepherd's Crook on the Life magazine. There's Billy Shears on Sgt. Pepper, you know, with the Ringo song, with a little help from my friends. So Shears, Shepherd, you know, we kind of brainstorm, like, what could this guy's name be? But it's all speculation. We don't know what his last name is. But Bungalow Bill, right, and Falls kind of got a really good double, makes a lot of mistakes, so he's Bungling Bill. so then, you know, Let It Be had some clues on the cover, too, with the four pictures of them, of the Beatles, and Paul's, McCartney, Fall at this point, you know, he has a red background behind him, which the others had white behind them, but red was supposed to symbolize blood. And
odd.
Yeah, he's got the full beard and mustache, which makes his face look rounder. His face has been made rounder by Photoshop or photo tempering. And all of the others have also been compressed from top to bottom to make them, their faces look rounder too. Because I have comps on my blog showing the original picture versus the finished picture for the album. So they were all tampered. And so that's just one way they hide the change with Photoshop, photo trickery, and also the studio. They've been able to conceal the different voice, how they sound, with speeding up or slowing down to make him sound more like Paul. But they also, I think they've messed with Paul's voice too later on, to make him sound more like Fall. So it goes both ways. Like, they try to make Paul look more like Fall, and they try to make Fall look more like Paul, and then it's like, and it's been going on since the switch. That's something that the forensic scientist said, because they're experts in photo tampering. They know exactly what to look for, and they said, well, you know, here's a picture of Fall's head being made to look rounder, and it seems to have been happening since the 60s, since 66, 67. So it's a big muddled mess, and it takes a long time to work through it.
Yeah, and
I spent 10 years on it before, you know, I mean, I started in 2008, and the book came out the beginning of 2019, so I put a lot of time and energy into that research to try to figure out what was going on.
Okay, and in the poster that comes, it's now the booklet that comes with the White Album CD. You get the photo of Fall laying in the tub with the like shampoo dot in the middle of his forehead, and it looks like a halo around his head as he lays in the bathtub.
Yeah, you know, that's actually a good point. Like, he's in the water, and I think Paul's body was probably dumped out here in Puget Sound. Buried at sea, that's what I think. But, you know, there were some clues on that White Album. Yeah, there was a picture of the guy with glasses, and people were like, well, who is that? And they're like, oh, that's Paul. It's like, that is not Paul. And then people are like, well, that's Paul. Well, yeah, it is Fall, but we still don't know who he is. I don't think it was a passport picture because it doesn't meet the requirements even close to being a passport picture. But that guy showed up in the Free as a Bird video that they did for the anthology. They referenced him about 3 minutes. 3 minutes into the video, they referenced that guy. So that must have been Fall in his life before he became a Beatle.
Okay,
it's pure speculation what this guy did. He may have been an actor. He may have been a spy. He had some sort of experience pretending to be somebody else.
Lyrics of on the Sergeant Pepper, and they just clearly state Billy Shears seems to be a new member of the Beatles.
That's right.
And there's the officially pronounced dead badge on Paul's left arm, but yeah, you know, you're saying that's also the Ontario Police Department. So
Ontario
did this Billy? Yeah. Okay. There you go. Thanks for correcting me. So was this Billy or Will, a Canadian brought in to be the replacement, but he's less talented? Do you think that's another, the OPD is just another clue?
Yeah.
So
they have the OPP patch, which is Ontario Provincial Police. It was photoshopped to look like OPD, which is officially pronounced dead in England, which is like dead on arrival in America. And then, you know, Fall was asked about this clue, and he said he thought it was Ontario Police Department. I mean, it's a bunch of BS from Fall. Whatever you ask him stuff, it's BS. But I'm not prepared to say that Fall is Canadian. It's a possibility. I'm prepared to say he's a native English speaker. I'm not even prepared to say that he's English. I don't think he's Scottish either, because his accent isn't... Well, I mean, he fakes his accent, but he could be Scottish. But we don't know where he's from. It's a complete mystery. People that are English say it's a fake accent. and I've heard him sound like an American before. So he doesn't have a Scouse accent. He doesn't sound like he's from Liverpool. So, you know, it's just, it's ironic because he's just not a very good double. He's probably one of the worst doubles that I've come across in my research. And I did write a book about more doubles, and if he had been a spy, he would have been shot, like, the first 5 minutes, you know? They would have figured it out. So it's like a big, it's just a big scam they're all running on people. They all laugh about it, and, you know, Jimmy Fallon says, oh, you're the best Paul McCartney impersonator, ha, 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 and they're all laughing. It's like, God, they're just laughing at the people, oh, my God. It's like all sorts of clues like that, you know. David Letterman was a really famous example when he was on the David Letterman show. And he's like, oh, you know, there's this rumor that you, you know, were killed in a place. And anyway, so they just, they tell people that they just make it seem like a joke. It's not a joke. It's true.
And something that your book taught me was, yeah, you know, there's that song like, was like a bigot's, like a 45-minute song, or,
oh, no,
45-second song.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's like, what? Yeah, this just seems like filler. You know, what's this doing on a, you know, Beatles album? And there's, you know, John singing, you know, like a Rolling Stone, and the FBI and CIA and Doris Day. What?
Well, clues. They're clues.
Yeah, you argue that that's actually some hidden clues.
I do, yeah. Well, again, it's like a Rolling Stone. Well, that's going back to the Bob Dylan rumor, I think. And, you know, that he was killed and replaced. And Bob. You know, you've read this more recently than I have, but I mean, CIA, FBI, obviously involved in psychological operations or, you know, spies and stuff, counterintelligence. Like Matt Busby, he was like a English football guy that died in a plane crash. I don't even remember now. I haven't looked that for so long. But yeah, if you research the people that they mention, or that they show, mm-hmm. and you'll see, like, oh my God, like Diana Dors with the gold dress. I was shocked when I found her movie about on the double. I was shocked, and I hadn't seen anybody else ever talk about that. So, yeah, they plant clues everywhere. Really, they do.
Yeah, and even in that, and you already referenced it a few minutes ago, the Free as a Bird song on the anthology, and they have this great video where they are recreating the supposed car accident. That's not just a coincidence that they just put a car wreck in there and then Photoshop John looking over someone's shoulder or what's going on. They're making some director's making an obvious nod at that whole legendary scenario. It really didn't go into the Tavistock concept, but you know, it's not a coincidence that the car wreck is in that video.
Right. Well, and also Bob Rubin's condensed Cream of the Beatles that came out in 1974. It's a really kind of creepy, dark cartoon. And I think it's pretty much telling you the story of what happened to Paul. And, you know, it's like a car chase, a car crash, somebody getting shot,
mm-hmm.
you know, fiery car on fire, and there's a guy with a Sergeant Pepper drum in his mouth, which to me is a warning to keep silent. There's the snake imagery, which is like, you know, potentially, well, Illuminati stuff. I mean, it's made by Pyramid Films, which was obviously Illuminati. So, yeah, I mean, I talk about that in a bit, too. So that's a, yeah, I think it's just telling you what's going on and what happened. I think that the car crash, they harp on the car crash a lot, and I think that's a little bit of misdirection because, yes, I do think there was a car crash involved, but I don't think it was an accident. Not entirely an accident. Not to say that a car didn't crash,
okay.
though. But I don't think that, I mean, I think that this was an intentional assassination and imposter replacement because it happened on, we see Paul in Seattle on August 25th, and that was the real Paul. And then August 28th, 1966, I think that's the first appearance of Paul. And that's 2 days. You're never going to find and train somebody to be able to pull it off even remotely in 2 days. So that's why I dismiss the accident scenario. Because it just, it wouldn't be possible. It had to be pre-planned. So, anyway.
It's after the Candlestick Park concert, the Beatles.
I think it was replaced before.
Well, just a couple days.
I think Candlestick was small.
Okay.
See, what happened Wally Fink was a photographer here in Seattle, and he went to the concert. And he surreptitiously took pictures because they weren't allowed, but he did. And it says a lot of pictures are black and white, and a lot of those pictures are being recycled as being from Candlestick. So people think it's Paul at Candlestick, but it's really pictures of Paul in Seattle a few days before.
It's at the, after that tour ended, the Beatles really didn't play live except for the rooftop performance in January of 69. I think they did like five songs. But Paul really enjoyed the live performances. So, there was another example of, you know, you take the early Beatles versus, you know, the later Beatles, and there's a big difference.
Yeah, the decision to stop touring had been made at least by September 26th of 1967, because their manager, Brian Epstein, tried to commit suicide because he was so upset about the turn of events. So sometime between the time they came back from America at is it August 31st of 66 to September 26th, sometime in that month, the decision was made to never tour again. Now, who makes such an announcement? We're never going to tour again? You can say we're going to take a break. That would make sense. But to never tour again. Such a final decision. I mean, it's uncharacteristic. This band had been playing live since 1957. And then they were planning to go back to America in 67, John Lennon said so. So something happened.
The something that you cover in Plastic Maca is compelling reading. There's just so many excellent points you argue with, you know, the clues on the albums and the lyrics, and you know, even get into you know, the later solo careers, Ringo's Back Off Boogaloo.
Right.
That's probably what song, you know, most people aren't thinking of, but you know, it is the day after Ringo's birthday, so you got to work in, give him a nod too. But yeah, you know, George on the cover of All Things Must Pass. There should be three garden gnomes, kind of smiling at the dejected looking George, but they're four.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, yeah, you know, there's if they're to represent the Beatles, there should be three. And it's just like, I forgot the point from the Magical Mystery Tour CD until I read your book, but you draw our attention to away in the sky, beyond the clouds, live four or five magicians.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't five people in the Beatles, except for, you know, later on they would call Billy Preston the fifth Beatle, but by this time, in 68, there were just the four of them. So who's the fifth Beatle?
Right.
Or the fifth musician.
Right. Well, and also there's George Martin's coat of arms, which has three Beatles on it. Kind of a big clue right there. It's like, why would you leave off? And he's like, oh, well, I wanted to, it was John died early, you know, 1980. But it's like, well, George had died by that time too, because he died in like 2001. So why do you, that just doesn't ring true. You put two Beatles on it, you know? It's like, what? So the three Beatles is a big right there.
Yeah, and in some interview, Ringo said that he's the surviving Beatle.
Yeah, he's the last remaining Beatle. That was 2011. That was a legitimate interview. And he said, oh, well, it's kind of a joke, but a lot of jokes have a certain amount of truth to them. It's like, you know, they come so close to saying it, but they just can't. They can't. Because they'll probably get off if they actually told people. You know, Heather Mills, she was threatened. Mal Evans was killed. Brian Epstein, we don't know exactly what happened there. He died from drugs, but we don't know if it was drug interaction or suicide or purposely taken out. But yeah, so Mal Evans was the most egregious case because he was about to publish a tell-all book about the Beatles. And just right before he was going to publish it, he got shot to death by the police in L.A. But he was set up by his girlfriend, apparently. So, but then, of course, the book manuscript disappeared. His ashes disappeared on the way back to England. And the suitcase full of Beatles memorabilia, photographs, and music, that disappeared, never to resurface. So that's all very suspicious. And, you know, parts of it were published later, but it didn't reveal anything. Well, of course, it's redacted. I mean, it's not going to reveal whatever they killed them for.
Okay, and you know we're running just a few minutes over, but yeah, we have to just do a quick review of Abbey Road to you know, CD. You know, that is one of the important pieces of art that make a lot of references to Paul being dead. You know, you found some interviews where Paul said it was just his sandals, you know, didn't fit in with the picture, and he didn't have another pair of shoes to wear, and it was really an extremely hot day.
Well, I think it was maybe in the 80s that day, but the album cover is just loaded with clues. It's of course everybody talks about like the funeral procession, right? Like John Lennon was the funeral director, and then Ringo was the undertaker, Paul was the corpse, and George was the gravedigger. And Paul has a cigarette in his right hand, which is a clue because Paul was left-handed, and he's barefoot, and there are different reasons for that, possibly, like, it could be to help hide the height difference, just take his shoes off, but why would somebody want to walk across a street barefoot when they have sandals that are suited for hot weather? So that doesn't make any sense. And
the pavement would have been like 110 degrees or something like that if you calculate temperature that day.
You could walk on it, but why? It's going to be gravel. It could have glass, cigarette butts, dog poo. Like, why would you walk on a street when you have sandals that are suited for hot weather? It just doesn't makes sense. And even the guy who photobombed the Abbey Road album cover, the American guy, he said, well, I just want to walk across. And it's like, they're crazy. Why are they walking across barefoot? You don't do that in London. So that whole story. And then Paul says, oh, people, that rumor started because of the Abbey Road album cover. Well, no one did it. It started like 3 years before. So he just makes stuff up, but the six toe thing, you know, that comes up. So sometimes I think he's purposely showing his bare feet to see if people will notice his extra toe. They're just different. There's so much stuff on the album, like the white beetle, which could symbolize a dead Paul. It had 28 if on the license plate, which was like 20. Paul would have been 28 if he had lived. And, And then songs on there, like The Sun King. See, that's one that's referencing Louis the 14th of France. And there was the man with the golden, or sorry, the man with the iron mask, who was the twin brother of the king, and there was going to be a coup using the king's brother to take his place. There was a movie about it, but it was a novel by I blanked on his name right now. But
that the Alexander Dumas.
Alexander Dumas. Sorry, I just blanked.
The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you get the golden slumbers.
Yep.
Being dead.
Yep. Golden slumbers. I always thought that was kind of creepy, even before I had really researched Paul's dad stuff. And then Come Together is also a little bit weird, and it could be like you're coming together at a grave site. You know, and looking down at the grave, and just like flat top. Here comes flat top. You know, like they were saying Paul's head and then like shear it off and weird stuff like that. So yeah, just lots of clues and things they said later too, like that John Lennon song, and they said those freaks was right when they said you was dead. You know,
mm-hmm.
how do you sleep, which is a total slam at fall, and saying your songs are music to my ears, and
the only thing you did was yesterday.
The only thing you've done was yesterday, and today you're just another day. Now you're just another day. So he's saying yesterday was good, another day is bad. I mean, that's how I read it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
another day was one of
Fall.
You know,
yeah.
Fall's solo songs.
That's right. Yeah, just kind of a mediocre song. I mean, it's average. Fall is average at best, I think, in my opinion.
Okay, so.
And,
you know, Tina, we are a few minutes over. Do you want to say it's time to say goodnight, sleep tight? or do you want to? We can keep going, or do you want to stop? That's fine. You can give people your website information, and I hope Plastic Maca took you by surprise.
Yeah, my blog is plasticmaca.blogspot.com, and my name is Tina Foster, and I'm on Facebook. The book is on Amazon. I also wrote The Splitting Image, which is about doubles. So that was sort of an introductory book, because so many people have trouble with the concept of doubles and imposter replacements. So I thought I would start with a book that laid all that information out, and then it's like preparation for Paul. Because people are like, well, how can they do it? They could never get away with this. It's like, okay, let's see. We got Stalin. We got Kim Jong-il. We got Saddam Hussein. We have Churchill, we've got Montgomery, General Montgomery, Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, we got tons of cases of doubles, and people, they don't notice. No, they don't. But some of them are really good, to be quite honest, so
mm-hmm.
they could be forgiven. But Fall is not a good double. He's not. He's probably the worst. And I mean, I would love for him to be exposed, but it's not going to happen. People are just going to have to figure it out on their own for themselves and not rely on any sort of official statement by Fall or the press. It's not going to happen. But, I mean, do people just go, do they base their entire reality on what the media tells them? They shouldn't. I mean, you should do some of your own research and investigation. So,
well, you did a great job. You have like a couple thousand footnotes where you document everything.
Well, I try because I want it to be a serious investigation and research and document where I get my information, because I'm not just making it up. Now, my theories are mostly original about what happened to him, but I base it all on real research. So I don't use fictional books for my information, you know.
No.
And so I mean, I probably overdid it, but I'm a lawyer, so that's just what I do. I don't want to leave something undocumented because that's academic dishonesty. It's frowned upon, you know, it's like plagiarism. So I always try to give credit if it's possible. If I'm not sure, I just go ahead and give them credit or cite it because it's fine. I don't want to be, you know, plagiarizing people or whatever. So anyway, it's probably, it might be daunting to some people, but if they don't like footnotes, just ignore them. They're footnotes. Like, you don't have to look at them. They're just there if you are interested in looking farther into it, you know. For that reason, with all the footnotes, it doesn't work as an ebook. So I had to take it off of Amazon as an ebook because it was just, it just doesn't work. I don't know why Amazon won't support PDFs in their ebooks, but they're just not, it's not suitable. So anyway, it's just a print book now.
Okay. It's a good one. Well, how about we end on that note, because we are at the end of the line. And I thought it was a great show. Thank you, Tina, for being our guest. And I'll be back, I think, next Tuesday with Alan Hunter. And just want to thank you again. The book's Plastic Mecca by Tina Foster. And we can wrap up the show. Thank you, listeners, and we'll see you next week.